overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
As Raoul rang the mindfulness bell, that is a beautiful opportunity to stop and turn within and to discover there is that which is within us that is holding us up, which is what I'm going to explore today. What is that something that holds us up during times when our hearts might be broken open with concern for the suffering on the planet? Could we remember that there is that which is within us and that which is all around us that will assist us and sustain us in times of hardship, as well as in times of great joy and happiness? And so the invitation this Sunday morning is to be fully present to the mystery of belonging to one another, to the mystery of divine love. It says in the book of John, God is love. And when we are loving, we are being godlike. And so let us explore what that is all about in this holy instant of now. Yesterday, I went to my front porch and someone had left a t-shirt with sunflowers and the Ukrainian flag. And I assumed that they were sending me a message. And so I put it on this Sunday morning as a symbol of solidarity for a country and a community of souls that are courageously showing us through their example what unity looks like. And so I drink from the wisdom and the commitment and the solidarity of those brave, brave souls as I offer my heart and my well wishes to the suffering that's on the planet right now. In the Center for Spiritual Living, we teach oneness, that there is one life, and that we are all an aspect of that one life. And so as we breathe into this presence that's always there, you know, we're spiritual beings and we're having a human experience at this time. And so could we know ourselves as both spirit and human? The human part of us can suffer with a physical body, with a mental body, with an emotional body. But the spiritual aspect of ourselves can touch that physical pain and say, I am here for you. When our mental body is running around with a narrative, there is this infinite mind that is free of thought. It is the field of awareness. We could call it the Buddha consciousness. And so when we take up refuge in the Buddha consciousness, we are in the awake awareness that contains all thought but is not bound by any thought. And so there is a freedom there. And so with the simple act of ringing a bell, we stop the thought patterns and we enter into a simple awareness. My beloved Charlotte gave me a rock today, and the rock has consciousness. It knows it's a rock. It's at peace. And so when I hold that rock in my hand, I'm holding the peace of the rock. And then the rock might be smiling at me. Sometimes it's frowning at me. And it says, don't forget that that peace is always there. And then I look at the smiling rock and says, yeah, you woke up. And so something as simple as a rock or a twig. My beloved Tina, she found some twigs on the ground and she put them on a frame and glued them down. And she said, nature is dancing. And as you look at those twigs, you see that this one life expresses in multiplicity and in diversity. And if you can see it in the smallest of things, as Meister Eckhart said, it's better than seeing an angel. And so what if we could see the divine reflected everywhere in the world and let it touch our heartstrings by our willingness to stop and open and have communion with a twig? And so we observe this capacity within ourselves to be courageous or not. We observe the capacity within ourselves to be forgiving or perhaps not. It was the Buddha that says, you don't learn from experience, you learn from your capacity to experience. So this Sunday morning, we inquire into what is our capacity to align to that something that holds us. There is a song about the wind beneath our wings. What is the wind beneath your wings? It was Victor Hugo that says, be like the bird who, pausing for a while on boughs too slight, feels them give way beneath her. Yet she sings, knowing she hath wings. And so we can use that metaphor for so many on this planet right now, where the boughs are giving way beneath them, and yet they're flying to places they know not of. They're leaving with their children and their pets sometimes. I saw an old lady of 83 years old who just left her family. She says, I don't know where I'm going, but I know that someone will be there for me. So she has faith, stepping into the unknown, that a kind heart will meet her kind heart and guide her to wherever it is that she is destined to be. And so as we open to these troubled times, we offer the troubled times our peace. We offer them the capacity to be fully present in compassion and mercy and kindness, which is our challenge, our responsibility, and our opportunity at this time on planet Earth. This month, we are speaking about serving the One. Mind you, the One shows up everywhere. My beloved Jody reminded me that our animal shelters are overflowing with cats and dogs that need homes, that need fostering, because people don't have a place for their four-leggeds. And so if there is a place in your life where you might be able to assist in any way, ask yourself, am I called to serve? And if the answer is yes, well, then it's one step at a time, one breath at a time, and you serve the moment by touching the moment with compassion. Breathing in, I smile to present moment awareness. And breathing out, I exhale and I say, yes, this too is good. This too is for God. And I demand to see the blessing. Breathing in another time, smiling to the universe, to present moment awareness. And you may find a lot of darkness, a lot of confusion, a lot of anxiety, but we smile to that, we accept it. And in that acceptance, we exhale and we let go. We let God. We let be what is. What if the greatest act that any of us could ever do is surrender? I of myself, Jesus said, do nothing. It's this beautiful presence, this Father within that doeth the work. So could we surrender to that, whatever that might be in our frame of reference? In the Islamic tradition, the name Allah means the emptiness. And the only requirement in Islam is to surrender to Allah. La ilaha illallah, there is nothing but God. La ilaha illallah, there is nothing but the emptiness. And the emptiness is the interbeingness, as Thich Nhat Hanh would say. Everything is the one. And when we open to that, when we inquire into that, then wheresoever we go, we see the face of God as a reflection of our own true nature. So take in a deep breath and say, I have arrived. Exhale, say, I am home. One more time, I have arrived in the holy instant of now, and I am home in the presence of the one that knows no other. And when you're ready, open your eyes. Enter into this beautiful place of connectedness. We have a new young lady named Ashley here. She's so pretty. She's sitting with her mask on. And we have another little Ashley in the back. You need to meet one another. Diversity in all its many forms. I love looking out at your faces. There's my beloved Anne-Marie. You know, these are troubled times on the planet. I know if I'm an empath. I feel the suffering. And sometimes it's hard for me to watch. The other day, I've been watching BBC a lot because it's just the news. It's not all the pontificators. And there was a British reporter, and she was in one of those towns in Ukraine. And she was at an animal shelter. And the vet had a seven-day-old baby goat, little tiny baby goat. The bombs had, and it had two casts on its arms. So it had casts on the two front legs. They were like this, and it was a tiny little thing. And so the reporter was a woman. She was holding the little baby goat in her arms, and the little baby goat's head was sitting right here. And she was noticing how fragile and frail this little goat was. And then the little goat put its mouth up to her earlobe and started suckling on her ear. And the reporter said, she's nursing on me now. And then she said, these are all our children. And we are all the mother. And the mother and me was holding that little goat in my arms. And then she said, the vet said, when the woman dropped off the baby goat with the broken legs, she said, make sure you tell that little goat that I'll be back for her. That's that Ukrainian spirit. I'm not going to abandon my little baby goat. So that one little moment just kind of broke my heart open. And yet it showed me the devotion to life. She didn't leave it by the side of the road. She brought it to the vet, and the vet had compassion enough, even with both broken legs, that this life mattered, that this life. And then on the BBC, they showed this young Ukrainian boy, I think he's 16, in Kyiv, and he plays the violin. And he says, music can uplift the soul. All of us know that. Last night on PBS, they had the best of Burt Bacharach. I'm old enough to know, I say a little prayer for you. But I remember the Burt Bacharach song that really stuck to my heart in the 70s was, what the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone. And as I'm listening to them singing that song, the tears are coming down my eyes. Things don't change. We still need love here on this planet Earth. So this young Ukrainian boy with his violin, and I guess it's gone viral on Facebook, he got 94 world-class violinists from all over. The orchestras in Austria and in England and he's playing the folk music of his country, Ukraine, and all the violins were assisting him by playing together. And in the virtual world, you saw 94 violins playing this folk music from Ukraine. And of course, there I am with the tears coming down my face. Tears of recognition that, and the young boy, and we don't know what's his fate because he's in Kyiv. And he says, I have to stay in the bunker down below because I'm afraid if I make too much noise that they would hear me. But he said, I know that my music will give hope to my people, and I want to give hope to the people on the planet. So here's this 16-year-old boy offering his courageous heart through the gift of music to the world. Not the ain't it awful story of why me, why is this happening, but how can I offer something? And so this Sunday, when I explore what holds us up sometimes is music. To just put music on. I've found myself turning off the TV because I feel like I'm turning on the war every morning. And so I'll put on some soft music, and I'll even play the Karen Drucker station, because sometimes the music and the affirmations of the music help me affirm, you know, I'm sending my love over the ocean. I'm sending my love over the hills, you know, and it returns to me. So Karen Drucker with a little song can be like a little mantra that helps me know that consciousness is something. When you send your well wishes to another, you're literally invoking a prayer. It was Emerson that says, prayer is the contemplation of the facts of life with a jubilant and beholden soul. So what if we access that jubilant and beholden soul, and when we see the suffering on the planet, and there is a lot, we can send that maternal part of ourselves and embrace. We're all the mother, and they're all our children. And so whether it's a little seedling that you're growing in the windows, we had it 28 degrees last night, and I had planted all my window boxes or my boxes with, I had the kale growing, I had the red leaf lettuce growing, I had the cilantro growing, I had the, oh gosh, they were all just doing beautifully. And then they say it's going to be a hard freeze. So there I am gathering these buckets and stones, because Trey said, you better put a stone on it because the wind's going to blow your bucket away. I said, thank you for your input. So I'm putting the buckets over, and then I'm finding stones and I'm placing them on top of the buckets. And when I leave here today, I will go and resurrect my little seedlings and to see how they do. And you know, anytime you extend yourself in love and service, you're the one that reaps the benefit. And that's that spiritual law that Jesus spoke about. As you sow, so shall you reap. So if you're going to sow kindness, you're going to reap the consequences of that kindness. If you sow acceptance for others. You know, we were talking in our revealing service about, and I mentioned it last Sunday, that so many people water the seeds of judgment. They water the seeds of fear. They water the seeds of anxiety. And if you water those seeds, they're going to be growing in your consciousness. But what if you could water the seeds of peace? If you could water the seeds of calm, and you could offer that to someone who might be hysterical, who someone might be freaking out. You could be that port in the storm. You could be those arms holding a little baby goat who's afraid, who've lost your mother, both your legs are broken, and a beautiful woman is holding you in her arms, and you're resting your head on her breast, and you decide to suckle on her earlobe because it's your mommy. And you can see that little goat didn't know any difference from the woman versus her mother. It does something to you when you make that subtle shift to this ineffable something that supports us, that uplifts us. We started our new class, and it's called The Art of Living by Thich Nhat Hanh. And it's super relevant for this time in history because, in essence, what he's talking about in the whole Buddhist teaching is how to meet the suffering on the planet. And when you realize that you are the world, remember that song? This is another one. We are the world. We are the children. We are the ones who make a better place. So let's start giving. It's all you. Well, then you don't turn away when the world shows you it's suffering. And so the first thing Thich Nhat Hanh says is you meet the physical suffering. It starts with your own physical body, but then you see the body of the planet and it's suffering right now. So you start with your own aches and pains. And when you have your shoulder and it's screaming at you, could you extend compassion to the shoulder and begin to explore what makes it feel better? And after a while, you realize, as my friend Marie Perez's, there's a guidance system from within you that will assist you in assuming the consciousness that's required for homeostasis, harmony, to be established. Sometimes I'll just put on music in the classroom or at home, and I'll let my body just move around, because I used to be a dancer, and I know what, if you don't use it, you lose it. So what if we could, and I even thought of taking you into a dance class some Sunday morning and have us all move, but then I thought, no, that's too radical, David. I don't want to scare people away. But when you're meeting your physical experience, we have to get creative. We have to get spontaneous. What does your body require? Sometimes when I was studying in my years of dance, Gabriel Roth, I went to New York City to study with her, and she would liberate the soul through movement. And there'd be a room with maybe 500 people. And, you know, it's New York City, and everybody has their pocketbook. And she says, you're more concerned about your pocketbook than you are your soul. She said, put your purses by the south side of the room. And everybody's so fearful. If this is New York, they're going to steal. Yeah, just put your pocketbooks. They're going to be fine. And she had them all come into the middle of the circle, and she had you dance the rhythms of your soul. And she says, there's the masculine rhythm. We're seeing an overabundance of the masculine on the planet. It's an energy. I'm not taking on men. And the masculine energy is staccato. It's this. It's forceful. It's assertive. And so we got to experience our inner masculine through dance. Then she said, I want you to feel your inner feminine. Now, the inner feminine, in the soul way of exploring it, is kind of a nurturing, a soft energy. So could we explore our inner feminine energy? So here you are, and the rule is there's no talking, because when you start speaking, the ego gets involved. There is just this collective experience of music playing, entering into the soul, and you're going to discover if you have a lot of repressed energy. You know, and some of those women could really get angry. They had an inner masculine that I'd never seen before. And a lot of men have an inner feminine that was really very beautiful to see. So could we not shame one and say that you're supposed to be one or the other, but allow for this diversity in the soul? Because the soul's nature is inclusivity. And then she had us dance the chaos. And they put on that crazy music. And chaos was difficult for someone like me who likes order in their life. So in chaos, you got to go crazy. Your hair was shaking. Your body was no control. And boy, the chaos was like a cathartic expression. And then the last rhythm of the soul she had, you danced the silence. You danced the stillness. And you could actually see how that was so soothing. After you expelled the chaos, then to return to that beautiful stillness, you know, which is our true nature. And then the surprise of all surprises was the fifth energy, which was the lyrical child within us, the part of us that wants to skip and play and do wild, impetuous things. You know, as I see them lined up at the train station, I see these little children, I see the innocence of youth. And Adam reminded me that when Thich Nhat Hanh would do his satsangs, he would always invite the children up in the front because they have that innocence, that spontaneity. And Adam said that they received the transmission from him. I said, no. He receives the transmission from them. He receives this play. And oftentimes, when he gets serious about giving you a lesson, he says, take the children out, he says to the monks and nuns, so they can play and be free. So the last dance we did with Gabriel Roth was the dance of the inner child. And we all have one. You know, John Bradshaw, when I was a young student in a spiritual teaching like this, they don't really explore the psychological stuff. So if you want to explore the psychological stuff and do the work on your subconscious, that's something you do on your own. And when I was studying to be a minister in the dark ages, there was a man named John Bradshaw. Anybody familiar with John Bradshaw? And it was all about working on your child, your inner child. You have fearful Freddy, you have critical Curtis, you have judgmental George, you have all these sub-personalities. And the whole Bradshaw work is get to know them. They're not your enemy. They have to be integrated sometime in your consciousness. It's not about being Happy Harry all the time and get rid of fearful Freddy. No, fearful Freddy and Happy Harry become colleagues, companions, so that you're a wholly integrated being. And it was so helpful to do that work on myself because I was kind of a mess. But after exploring all those things in John Bradshaw's book, Homecoming, the very last chapter is called The Child of Wonder. And he says, once you've met all your demon children, he says, then you find that innocent child of wonder that is your true nature. And then you begin to see things through the eyes of innocence. And you can have darshan with a horse, with a caterpillar, with a butterfly. It's because you're seeing yourself in the smallest of things. Now that's the ideal way of honoring the life that you've been given. We've been given one life, and sometimes we've had trouble in this life. I would say most of us have. But what if that's the grace of life? That life gives you these opportunities for growth. We were talking about another bloody growth opportunity that life has given us. Now we can say that we can label it bad or we can label it as necessary. And then once you have the capacity to accept this life with all of its foibles, you think, my God, I wouldn't be the person I am had I not had the challenges along the way that have established a certain strength and courage and clarity of perception. I using this lovely book as an inspiration this month. It's called Things That Joy in the Sea and the Sky by Mark Nepo. He's a poet that survived cancer twice and came back so transparent to this presence. And he inspires me with simple little ideas, like this one chapter is called What Holds Us Up. And this is what he said. He says, there's something that holds us up, a mystical buoyancy under all our problems. Now, when he says something like that, tap in, Ashley, to that buoyancy. Yeah, problems are going to exist. And you know, people sometimes pride themselves on being problem solvers, but you know the trap with that is, what does a problem solver need? A problem. And when you're not a problem solver, when you're someone who's con- in a way, transcend the problem, not identify with the problem, then the problems are just really part of the drama, part of the illusion of the egoic self that loves to struggle and suffer and identify with the pain body. If you want to read an inspiring book, The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, the whole first half is about the pain body. And we have a world that lives in the pain body. You can talk to Mary Tudor. She knows about the pain body. She has her friends that have a group called the Pain Body Group. And we get together. And then until you can laugh at it. And that simple laughter gives you space and you stop identifying with the problem. The problem isn't real. The problem is a construct of the mind. It's a whole different shift of looking at things. So he says there's this mystical buoyancy that's underneath all of our problems. Could we go to the buoyancy instead of the problem? Question. So our job, he said, is to stay light enough to remain afloat and to trust amid all this turbulence that there is some element of being that will sustain us if we surrender to it. To surrender to that ineffable something that is supporting you, uplifting you. In the Sufi tradition, their spirituality is so simple but so profound. They said it's all about forgetting and remembering. When we forget who we are, we identify with the pain body and we awfulize, and life is a bitch, if you will. But when we remember who we are, we realize, oh my God, I am the expression of the One in this unique form, here to evolve and grow and discover an eternal truth. If I can have the capacity to surrender to it, it wants us. My Zen calendar this week said, the stream heads to the ocean. And when you get to the ocean, forget the stream. It's not about me or Ashley. It's about the ocean. And then the ocean begins to awaken within all creation, and we're all the same in that. There's no hierarchy in that. Boy, how humble you must be to say, La ilaha illallah, all there is this presence. Now, that's what he's saying. Discover that buoyancy within yourself and play with it. Get playful, like the inner child of wonder would be. Well, there was a wonderful book called Joy is My Compass by Alan Cohen. And he's a motivational speaker like myself, I guess. And he was doing one of his speaking gigs around the country, and he was staying in someone's house. It's usually where they put you up. And he's waking up from the bed. All of a sudden by the bed is a little girl, 6 years old. And she introduces herself, and she says, what do you do? And he says, I just speak to people and do that. He says, what do you do? And she says, I play. That's all I do is I play. And then he realized that she became his guru, because joy was her compass. And then he wrote a whole book predicated on a six-year-old who, through her innocence, could awaken a simple act of joy, of just being in the moment and the play of life. It's all the play of life. In Hinduism, they call it the Leela, the play of life. So could we approach our life in a playful way instead of a hard-ass way? You know, I got to succeed. I got to care about what people think. Yeah, a child doesn't do that when they're playing out in nature. So he's saying, discover this. Our job is to stay light enough. They say the angels can fly because they take themselves lightly. I hope you can figure that one out. Okay, so to stay light and trust in the turbulence that there's something sustaining us, and we get to surrender to that something. So he said, as the air that makes up the sky also fills our lungs. Now that's this panentheistic idea that we're in God and God's in us. So the air is in us and we're in the air. He's using a metaphor here. So as the air that makes up the sky fills our lungs, what holds us up is around us and it's within us. That's heaven and earth coming together. So could we open to the grace of this beautiful planet that's holding us up, but also to the mystery of the universe that's so vast we can't even begin to put it in a local place. It's the non-local mind. So then in prayer, strangely as it sounds, you move out of the local mind into the non-local mind. Now, what would the non-local mind think? It wouldn't have rules and regulations. It wouldn't have structure and order and hierarchy. It wouldn't have a linear way, because it experiences the vastness of everywhere and nowhere that exists in us and all around us. Now, play with the non-local mind. It's not Michael's and David's mind. And then when we meet in that, I can meet a total stranger, and I haven't met a stranger, I've met myself. In the non-local mind. Wow. You heard me say my favorite Zen saying, and they're koans. They're here to blow your mind. And the koan that I like the best is, it says, you know why you're so miserable? Because 99.9% of the things you talk about are all about you, and you're not. That makes me smile. Okay. So as the air that makes up the sky fills your lungs, what holds us up is around us and within us, and it lifts us when we least expect it with a wave of being that will carry us when we're still enough to receive it. That's why it's important to get still. You know, meditation, they say, is listening to God. There's a beautiful affirmation that says, be still and know that I am God. And so what is our job? It's just to be still. And in that stillness, there is a knowing, a gnosis, G-N-O-S-I-S. The Gnostics were all about that gnosis. It's not a logical plan about getting somewhere. No, there's a knowing that begins to awaken within. And our opportunity is to discover that. It's all about discovery. It's not about having a strategy to get somewhere because you're already there. Rather, it's about stopping and opening and discovering, oh my God, it's right there within me. It's holding me up. It's moving me forward. It brought Ashley here today. That's what it does. Divine love brings together and maintains together those who belong together. So when I was 30 years old, divine love brought me to that center in Atlanta where I'm sitting in the back and I'm hearing a message that changed my life. And every Sunday I would come back and I'd sit in the back and maybe I'd move a little bit up. And it took me a year before I was sitting in the front. But I realized that I had to literally die to an old identification of me as this victim, this person who was struggling with an identity of my ego, and to awaken something that was so much deeper. And it's been awakening ever since. And so could I surrender to that part of me that remembers the truth and literally not identify with the one who sees myself as separate? My prayer partner, we've been prayer partners for over 20 years, and he was a monk who fell in love with another monk, had to leave the monastery. Then he became a minister in this teaching. And he's a good reference point for me because he came out of that tradition of Catholicism and he understands the language of sin and retribution and all that sort of stuff. And we were talking about sin today and you know, the only sin is to forget that you're separate from that because all there is that. So what if when we go and sin no more, we stop seeing ourselves as separate from this presence and we are humble enough to say, that wheresoever I look, I see the face in God because God is looking through me. That all there is God. There, then it's all sacred. Every little bit of it is sacred. Isn't that a nicer way to be in life? Instead of seeing other, there is no other in oneness. So he goes on at the end of this little section. He says, the friction of the world, and God knows there's a lot of friction out there right now. The friction of the world slows us down until we have the capacity to receive everything. To be slowed down, to just stop. To open your heart, to see a baby goat, and to know that that's enough so the tears of recognition and nurturing can be awakened within, to stop and listen to a young boy play his violin and to feel that his music is traveling around the earth. Music heals. So he says, though we often feel alone, we're never alone. And when we feel a sense of being held, we're coming alive. This is where we're really going. Into the embrace of where we are. This is where we're going, into the embrace of where we are. So I'm inviting you to feel the embrace of the love that never goes anywhere. When I was a young, to me, age is irrelevant, maybe when I was 40, I went to study with the Sufis, and religious science is largely about using a spiritual law to manifest what you want in this world. And there's a beautiful qualities about that mental science. But as I began to evolve, and it was through my mother dying and my teacher dying, that I found a different path, and it was the path of the heart. And what Llewellyn said was, it's not about you. It's never been about you. It's about the one. And he says, and when you serve the one serves you. So it's not about getting the one to have something change in your life. Rather, it's about you always being in service to the one, and the one being love itself. And then he said this to me, and it just went through like the sword of Allah. He says, do you know how much you are loved? And in that moment, I felt the love of the universe. And I just started to shake and sob. And he said to me, what is wrong with you? And I said, I'm afraid I'm going to lose control. He thinks he has control, he said. And so in that moment of catharsis, I felt this love that is embracing all of us. And it's not a logical thing. It's a felt thing. So then he would say, can you feel your way into the truth? Because the truth is always revealing itself. So near the end of this book, he He tells a story that I thought was relevant for all of us. He couldn't sleep at night. My prayer partner, on February 24th, the night of the insurrection, he said, I woke up and he said, I was deeply disturbed. He said, I could feel there was something in the energy field. And he said, I remember Obi-Wan Kenobi saying, there's something in the field that is awry. And he said, I actually felt this thing on the planet. He's an intuitive. And he couldn't sleep. And so Mark Nepo talks about when you can't sleep at night. And I've been having I've been waking up at 3 a.m. Thich Nhat Hanh's been coming through, helping me face my own pain body. So here's what Mark Nepo talks about. What holds us up is the breath of the moment, the breath of now. I love it how Susan said she's been listening to Thich Nhat Hanh, and she says, breathing in, I smile. And with that smile, I touch whatever is arising within me, and I accept it. So here's how he puts it. At times, there is hardship in life, and it has the potential to open us up like a shovel could open up the earth. And sometimes, like now on the planet, I'm softened by the glow of those who are entangled in the dark of their experience, because we're not separate. It's important that we keep that empathic connection alive and not turn away from it. He says, last night I couldn't sleep. So I imagined that my breathing was coming and going through the crack in my heart. I wonder if he smiled when he breathed in. So he turned to anchor himself in the breath. Now, breath is another name for spirit. So Thich Nhat Hanh's great teaching is mindfulness. Breathing in, I breathe in. Breathing out, I exhale, and I let go of whatever needs to be gone. It's so simple. So 3 a.m, he's lying there and he's breathing into his heart. This is Mark Nepo. So I imagined that my breathing was coming and going through the crack in my heart, and this relaxed me. This brought me into a sense of calm and peace. And so I closed my eyes and I imagined that with each inhalation, I was owning the suffering, the mistakes, the struggles, whatever it was that was arising. I wasn't pushing it away, I was embracing it. And with each exhalation, I was sending a drop of mercy to those on the planet who are suffering right now. Isn't that a beautiful image? With every exhalation, send a blessing of mercy and compassion to those who are suffering. And whether I know them or not, this was my practice. Then everything began to quiet within me, he says. The noise of my pain abated. The noise in my mind fell away. The noise of the world remaking itself faster than we can break, it all fell away. And in that widened space that I created within myself, I felt the air of love lift me up. Once I created that space, is it that simple? Maybe it is, to be still and know that I am love. And in that stillness, to let this love lift us up and then offer it in the next moment to whomever is there, whatever suffering might show up. I felt the air of love lifting me up. And this is why I thank anyone who I meet, because in case what helps me came from you. That young man in Kyiv with his violin touched my heart so deeply. The lady with the crippled goat touched me. She opened my heart. And I want to close, Raoul, if you want to go back to the bell, with a little prayer from Jeff Foster. I found this morning, and I think this might help all of us, because this is how we can find the stillness in the chaos right now on planet Earth. The chaos is going to be there. Could we make it our intention to find the center of the storm and to act from that place? I'm going to invite Raoul to ring the mindfulness bell and invite you to enter into that still point within yourself and to learn to listen, be still. And once we go within to that stillness, we begin to listen to this guidance that doesn't necessarily speak in words, but speaks in images. You know, a flower that blooms gives a message of opening to the moment. A tree that reaches up to the light and puts its roots down to the earth gives a message of commitment to be in one place and yet to grow. And so here's his beautiful, he said, your legs ache. You've been on your feet all day. As I read this, I was seeing the people standing in line to catch a train to flee their country, thousands and thousands of people waiting for hours, old ladies, children, animals. Your legs ache. You've been on your feet all day. You're in a long line waiting for a ticket to a place you know not. They've just announced that your train is delayed. You feel the frustration mounting. You feel impatience. You feel annoyance. You feel despair. There is resistance in this moment to the way things are. And when there is resistance, we're not free. When there is resistance, we suffer. And then suddenly you remember you're breathing. And it is now. And you only ever have to face the now. And you feel your tired feet rather than thinking about them. And you give them a little attention, which is love. And you feel the frustration in your chest and your belly. But rather than to try to delete these innocent sensations, you just embrace the upset stomach and the ache in your body. And then you feel the weight of your body, the way it gently rests in gravity, and how it's supported by our sacred earth as you stand in this long line. You feel your belly begin to expand slowly, rising on the in-breath, and then falling on the exhalation. And all the sounds around you are now innocent. You are a soft microphone. And the thoughts swirling around in your head, well, they're just like little birds. And they may be singing their songs and flapping away. And within you, you've discovered that it's all okay. It's all okay. It's all present. You're here now. And it's all okay. And even though it's not okay, it's okay. It's okay that life is like this right now. And then you find gratitude again within yourself. You say to yourself, I'm alive. I've been given this day on earth. It's my day to live. It's my day to breathe and taste my own human experience, to taste the joy of this moment and the sorrow of this moment, to taste the train stations and the ticket machines and the uncertainty and the boredom of it all, the frustration and the rush and the whir of it all, the stillness and the crash and the pull and the chaos and the bombs of it all. You're already surrendered, and you find yourself on the train, heading somewhere, trusting some unfathomably ancient schedule to take you where you need to go, where you can yet again be in the present moment and love what is. And so we stop. And we take refuge in the emptiness of being. The emptiness means empty of the local self. And when there is no me and you, well, then all there is that. That, the breath of life, which supports us, which fills us. One in which we live and move and have our being world without end. And so we align with the silence, with the stillness. Eckhart Tolle said, stillness is the language of God. Everything else is a poor translation. And so we return to stillness. And we see the smile of the Buddha. The smile of that loving presence that says, you are here. Right now, you have this moment to align to our true nature, which is love, which is peace, to take refuge in that peace, in that love, in that clarity of perception, in that sense of interconnectedness to all. Thich Nhat Hanh calls it interbeingness. We are each other. And so when you have the image of a little baby goat and a woman, a mother and child comes to mind, and they're all our children, and we are all the mother. And then something begins to subtly shift within our heart. Because the heart knows oneness. Whereas the head might want to get caught up in duplicitous thinking of right and wrong, good and bad, them and us. When in truth, love leads the way. And the law makes the way possible. This year is the 60th anniversary of West Side Story. I was in 7th grade when I saw it for the first time, and it changed my life. I saw it yesterday on Netflix, and I can say it changed my life as well, again. A beautiful story as ancient as Romeo and Juliet, of the jets and the sharks, of the Russians and the Ukrainians. When you're a jet all the way from your first cigarette to your last dying day. And then you see the townies are the jets. This is our country and you don't belong here. And then you see the Puerto Ricans coming in, wanting to bring a new energy, and they're not accepted. And you see this conflict, this age-old conflict of them and us playing out with Leonard Bernstein's incredible music, with Stephen Sondheim's incredible lyrics. There's a place for us, somewhere a place for us. And you realize that it's the cry of the Ukrainian people to find a place where love can once again claim itself in diversity, not in them and us. And so in simply watching a reprisal of something that's 60 years old, it's as fresh and alive and as relevant as it was 60 years ago. So we find ourselves in this present moment right now, knowing that ignorance is all around us on the planet, that there are those out there fighting to be superior to others. And yet there is that voice of innocence and love that can sing, there's a place for us to get along with one another, to love one another, somewhere a place for us. Hold my hand and I'll take you there. Somehow, somewhere, we'll find a new way of giving. We'll find a way of believing somewhere. And so as Maria and Tony sing their plight, knowing that Tony is doomed, we know that a shift perhaps is taking place on planet Earth. And we get to lend our heart to that shift, to always anchor ourselves in that love that supports us, that holds us up, that reveals itself by shining through our mind, our heart, our bodies, our actions. And we surrender to that. We remember that. As it says in the Quran, when you remember him, he remembers you. And so we remember that divine love is in charge. And we ask it to assist us in assuming the consciousness that is required to take the next step on this journey home, realizing that we've already arrived, that home is that place within us where the light shines in the midst of the darkness, where the peace prevails in the midst of the chaos. As we're standing in line at the train station, we breathe and we give thanks, knowing that spirit is within us and spirit is all around us. And we surrender to that. The best definition I heard of surrender is surrender happens when you're not there. And so when the me person is no longer trying to do anything, there is that which holds us up, that reminds us, lo, I am with you always. And we smile to that presence amidst the suffering. And perhaps that smile is the smile of the one showing up in this sacred moment so that we might drink from that nectar of the one. If you're comfortable, place your hand on your heart. The Sufis call it the cave wherein God lies. And to that space within and all around, let's say together the heart salutation. I honor you. I respect you. I love you. You are the light of the one shining within all creation. revealing possibility and potential to all of us. Igniting the fire of transformation that burns away all the ignorance and sets us free to be all that spirit longs to be by means of ourselves in service to the One, celebrating each moment as heaven revealed here on earth. It starts with me. And I celebrate this moment. Trusting and knowing that it unfolds with grace and ease, I invite you to open your arms, open your hands, look around you, see your face shining back. You are the One, you are the world, you are the ones who make a better place. So let's start giving. Nice to see you all. Be safe. Love you, little Michael.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. More information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.